In this first lecture on the potential for good and for evil contained within the human capacity for desiring that which is beautiful, the experience of human sexuality, that which draws a human being out of themselves and into relationship with that which they perceive to be beautiful, in this section I've chosen to focus on four Greek words. The first, porneia. The word that is most commonly used in the vocabulary of the monastic desert to describe the whole realm of sexual misbehavior. And the word itself, as we'll see, corresponds not so much to the question of thoughts, although this is the primary concern of the Desert Fathers, but actually more to actions, to a lifestyle, toward a series of acts that become incorporated into human behavior. It doesn't have a single word translation in English. It's usually translated as sexual immorality or sexual uncleanness. And we'll look at it in more detail in just a moment. The other three words are two having to do with the virtues of the desiring or concupiscible part of the self, what Plato and the later Greek fathers, and indeed the Christian Greek-speaking mystics, call the epithumeticon, the part of the self having to do with desire, what Aquinas will describe as the concupiscible appetite, and the two words are sophroshene and enkratia. Sophroshene meaning moderation or temperance, and in the earlier tradition this is the broader overriding general virtue, and enkratia, self-control, more specifically having to do with self-mastery, the ability to say no to that which threatens to become excessive or inordinate. And the fourth word is epithumia, desire, which of course we've seen already in the naming of this part of the self that is responsible for desiring. But we'll look at these terms in a bit more detail now. So if you drop down to number two, to section number two, the description of porneia, please note that in its original sense, porneia comes from Greek words, porne in particular, which have to do with selling, that is to do with ownership, with the use of another person for one's own purposes. It refers to the turning of the other person into an object which is possessed, and then a sense of the right to use them for one's own self. In fact, in history, prostitution in ancient Greece was primarily something that was involved the oppression of slaves, primarily women who were carried off in war. And therefore, it has a very profound and deep sense of using another person as an object and even as if they were property, and to use them for one's own selfish and sensual purposes. In the Old Testament context, porneia primarily means prostitution, but it becomes allegorically or symbolically a way of describing the act of turning away from covenant with the Lord. It's an unfaithfulness, a kind of adultery of which everyone is capable in their relationship with God. In the New Testament, porneia is primarily used to refer to any kind of forbidden form of sexual behavior, whether prostitution or adultery or any other inappropriate form of behavior, and again, it's usually translated as sexual uncleanness or sexual immorality. The terms sophroshene and enkratia refer to the virtues of this desiring part of the self. In the Greek philosophical tradition, sophroshene is usually that that which is translated as the cardinal virtue of this desiring capacity, but it doesn't just refer to desire. In its fundamental sense, it can also refer to a kind of mental or intellectual or even noetic prudence or discretion, which is manifested in a moderation of sensual desire, a capacity for self-control and temperance. And so in the New Testament, where it's used in the letters, primarily the letters of St. Paul, it describes a moderation and balance that is opposed to frenzy or excess or inappropriate and uncontrolled zeal. The term enkratia, as we'll see when we look at it in a little more detail in just a second, generally refers to self-restraint. And so if we drop down in this third section to number one, in classical Greek describing the meaning of enkratia, here we have mastery over self. So whereas porneia referred to the misuse of another with a sense of entitlement or mastery over them, the virtue of enkrateia is to have mastery over the self, not to look upon the other as an object or the source of a sensation, but to look at one's self as the place where the real struggle for virtue has to take place. The term that invites, as we'll see, the Desert Fathers to be convinced that the real focus needs to be in one's desires. Not just the question of action, it's the thoughts. It's what goes on within the fantasy life with which one must be concerned. I've noted in Numbers 2 and in the section below it that Philo describes enkrateia as a particularly Jewish ascetical virtue, and by that he means superiority to every desire. And in the New Testament, although not found in the Gospels, it is used in the letters to describe self-restraint in a general sense, and sometimes in particular of chastity, of a restraint of one's sexual faculty. Very important is this final section on epithumia. The word is used in classical Greek, as is noted here in the text, in a very general and moderated and sense that doesn't contain any negative connotations. It simply means the impulse towards food, or it can refer to sexual desire, or even in a more general sense to any kind of desire. That's not morally objectionable, it's not suspicious, strictly speaking, but with the development of the philosophical tradition and the sense of the need for balance, this term, epithumia, acquires a negative connotation, since the true philosopher is going to be able to control desire. It therefore becomes something which must be controlled, and indeed something that can sweep one up. In the Old Testament, epithumia is generally used to describe unlawful desire, that is lust or covetousness, desiring something or someone that does not belong to you properly speaking, or simply lust, one's desire for sexual gratification. In the New Testament, it is usually used, and this is especially true of the letters of St. Paul, to translate the word lust, inappropriate or wrongful sexual desire directed towards inappropriate objects. But that's not the only meaning it has. And as we'll see in the Christian mystical tradition and the Desert Fathers, there's the question of how do you use desire according to nature? Why did God give us this gift? Not simply so that it might be withstood, but so that it might be used appropriately, not necessarily in sexual behavior or in genital activity, but what is the proper according to nature use of epithumia or desire? And I'm convinced that in one of the examples of its positive use, one has a very clear indication or a kind of signpost. And that is, at the very bottom of this page, the text in the Gospel of Luke, Luke 22, where Jesus says, epithumia, epithumesa, with deep or ardent desire, with epithumia, I have desired, eagerly, even eagerly desired, epithumesa, to eat this paschal meal with you before I suffer. The use of desire according to nature is most clearly manifested for us in the desire of God, the desire of Christ, to give us himself in the Eucharist. Christ desires, with eager desire, to celebrate the Passover meal, the institution of the Eucharist with us. The longing and the desire, the epithumia of God, is God's outpouring in relationship so that we can exist in relationship with God. Christ shows us what the proper use of desire is and can be for human beings.